The four regulative principles and those vows are really only the beginning. That's really the ABC of Krishna consciousness. And it is part of sambandha. Devotional service is made up of three aspects: sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. Sambandha means to make the connection. Avideya means the process of purification, and prayojana means to develop love of God. So sambandha, the connection, is to be made in various ways. We have to connect to the scripture, connect to a spiritual master, then we are connecting with the vows, we take initiation, and until we've done all those things, we are not fully connected. If we're not fully connected, then it means that we have, on the one hand, things that draw us strongly to Krishna, and we want Krishna, and on the other hand, we have something that draws us somewhere else. And then we are torn between two sides in us, and that's our spiritual life. And we go up and down between the two. It's called bhog and jhag. We have a desire to enjoy, and we want to give. And other times we want to give up the material. And it depends on going between these two. So some people get stuck in that, and they stay in this initial stage, and they never get fixed up in Krishna consciousness. They never make a firm connection. And yeah, then you are like a broken wire. Some electricity is coming through, but it's not like the full charge, the full load. That is basically what is happening. So, sambandha means, alright, we are accepting Krishna's, whatever Krishna desires from us. We adjust our life accordingly, and we take shelter of a spiritual master, we take initiation, we keep our vows. Fine, and then we are a devotee in good standing. Sometimes we make these recommendations: such and such is a devotee in good standing, signed, certified, stamped. And very nice. But then what? Then we are still not satisfied. Then we are still not feeling fulfilled. Still empty, still hungry, still looking. Still not there. Even if everybody knows we are a good devotee, in the sense of that we follow the standards nicely. But even if we give, even if we are able to be such a good devotee, who lives by the standards, standards of Krishna consciousness, and we are recognized as a good devotee. Internally, we are still not fulfilled. Internally, we are still struggling. Even when we are learned in scripture, even when we can recite so many verses, even if we are leading others and showing them Krishna this way, even if we are leading in the programs, or we may still not be fulfilled. We may still be emptiness in our hearts. So this becomes the challenge, and time goes on, and we are devotees and in good standing, and we're following everything, but yet still not fulfilled, still struggling. In a sense, still not happy. So yes, this is where we are are now coming to the point of inner vows, we have to do more. We have to make more commitment to Krishna. We have to make more offerings to Krishna. Just as the pujari is making a nice offering to Krishna, prepare a nice offering, nice tray, so many nice things, and then offer it to Krishna. And by doing that, a pujari becomes again purified and enlightened, and attracts the mercy of Krishna. Well, just make a nice offering for Krishna. But of course, in one sense, our whole life is like an altar. And being a devotee is like being a pujari on the altar of the material world. And you have to just, what a pujari does, take things. You take things, you purify them, so that they're ready for, you collect some suitable items, purify them, and then you offer to Krishna. So that's what life is all about, making offerings to Krishna. So the inner vows is about, what are we going to do? What special, what extra are we going to do to be Krishna conscious? Not only to be fixed in the regulated principles, not only to follow the basics, but how are we going to actually absorb? And so at that time we have to start thinking, what things can I bring into my life? Now, in a previous year, I brought up a topic of the need to create a sacred space and to fill that space, to fill our life with offerings to Krishna, to fill our life with remembrance of Krishna, like the place where we live. It can be a flat, right? It can be. But it can also be a bhajan kutir. Right? If it is a bhajan kutir, then it is a holy place where we are worshipping Krishna. Well, then it should start looking like a holy place. Right? Then it should be full of holy items. Then it should become a treasure house, not just an ordinary place. Not just a place where you camp out, but then it should be like a house which is filled with transcendental things. Then that house will give us nourishment. It will give us some fulfillment. Yeah. It's like whenever we see Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Just like here, we try to make the scout hall, which has the local scout acharyas, I'm looking at them from here, in painters at the wall, founder acharya, Vaden Powell, of the scouts, and so on, and then other successive acharyas. You can see, same thing, but we're trying to make it more devotional. So some pictures of Krishna, some Timat signs next to the door, a few Indian lamps under the acharyas, and a backdrop for the Swami sofa, and we're transforming a hall into something a little more spiritual, of course. You can go to town and do even more, go 3D and there's no end to what you can do, right? And the aim, the purpose is to create more nourishment in our life. So inner vows are for that idea, to bring more Krishna. Yes, we just make some inner commitments that we don't have to do. It's alright. That was a nice idea. I commit to making the place where I live a place of pilgrimage. My house should be like a holy place. All right? You think about how to make it a holy place. Some people have that ability. I don't. I have nothing with houses. I live from a suitcase. But for sannyasis, that's okay. They can. It says the sannyasi can worship the deity in his mind. So that's my ashram. I don't need to have a big altar. But in the Grihastha ashram, oh yes, deity worship must be there, and the deities will save us. They will save us. What would we become without the deities? So in this way, we have that faith that yes, these deities, they are my saving grace, and they will help me in life. Not only will they help me to stay pure, they reciprocate, and I will make offerings to them. So that is something valuable to do, something that one can do. For example. Others, they take an inner vow on the weekend, I'm going to chant more hours. And I know some people who do that, correct? Who like, every weekend they get serious. And I'm like, and this is like, okay, one day I'm getting really serious. One day a week. Okay? Saturday is a shopping day, but Sunday morning I'm up early and then I chant like double, no, 32 every Sunday. And take care of me. Yeah, 32 every Sunday, right? Yeah. So like, oof. But suppose there would be one person here in the room who would do that. And let us see, after 5 years, what the result would be. And I guarantee you that it would start to carry some weight. And then after 5 years, it seemed like, yes, this has become like, we faithfully did that every Sunday. So it's like, whoa. Now it's become like something that gives him strength and power, right? More than anyone else. It's not easy. I admit it would be tough to do 32. But then somebody says, yeah, but maybe I can, you know? Somehow or other, this is. Maybe I could do that one. Okay, the deity worship, I don't know. But maybe that chanting one, I could do. And so it's individual. But something you gotta do. If our whole spiritual life is only doing the minimum, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Now I'm not talking about the ones who are not doing what they're supposed to do. The ones who are not doing what they're supposed to do, they are the unhappy devotees. Remember, there are two options: either to be a happy devotee or an unhappy devotee. So they're the unhappy devotees. So what can I say about the unhappy devotees? They'll be unhappy. Silly. That's life. So I'm talking about real devotees, the happy devotees, who are trying to go a little deeper. So they have to start doing things like that. You get things like some devotees, they know the whole Bhagavad Gita. And I know someone, he's like working a job, he's got 3 kids, he's like working in an insurance broker, and it's a busy job, and oftentimes he has to go at night to meet customers and potential customers. So they've got a lot to do. But he's learning Bhagavad Gita by heart. So far, I think he's come somewhere more than somewhere halfway in the 9th chapter. But he knows the whole thing, and he knows the translation as well. And it just goes on and on and on. So that's impressive. We can do it. It's not actually difficult, because you have these small Gitas. We also have an iskcon with like just the Sanskrit, right? And you just read that. And then after a while you know all the Sanskrit verses. I used to every day chant seven chapters of the Gita. And it's, every day I would do seven chapter in translations. And still, my I've been too lazy to learn the whole Gita in my heart, to tell you the truth. But some do it. Some do it. And they get something out of that. So yes, these are, this is the inner vows, that where we say, something I can do. It's individual. And it's not like, I don't know what it is, you know. It can be someone who loves painting and who will say, I will make backdrops for the deities, right? And makes nice paintings for the deities, but meditates on the deity in his painting and making backdrops. So it's not cut and dry in the inner vows. It's not just that it's the same for everyone. It's individual. It's something we have to do. Let's say, okay, I'm going to learn the bhajans of Narottama Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'm just going to learn them and get absorbed. And Prabhupada says these songs of these acharyas are as good as scripture. They're as good as scripture. They are very rich. So if one gets absorbed in that, that gives us, that is a great source of inspiration. So by investing in something through an inner commitment that we make to do something like that, we will also develop some inspiration. And this is the trick. As a sannyasi, you know it very well, because as a sannyasi, the vows are very intense, right? Because the vow is basically, you know, in the Grihastha ashram, you read the label, and if there are no better ingredients, well, then it's okay. Then it's okay, let's have it. Yeah. It's bona fide. I read, all the Olympia numbers are fine, it's completely bona fide. Let's go for it. As a sannyasi, it's more like, well, why would I take it? It's not only, is it bona fide? Is it prasadam? We offered it. Yeah, but it's not like we offered it. We wanted to eat the ice cream, so we offered it. That's not the same as we made an offering for the pleasure of Krishna. We really made a nice offering for Krishna. Today, we're worshipping the deities. Today, everyone will go in the kitchen and make something for Krishna, because today is Janmashtami and we're trying to do something really nice for Krishna. And then you see at the end, you know, like 100 days or more, perhaps, you know, 400 preps, and you see, I remember Kurma, and he was still cooking to master the offerings, 400 offerings in Melbourne, I remember. And we had to taste them all. had 400 preps. Two half ping pong balls on the island. Yes? it's an offering for Krishna. But if you use Krishna for our convenience, you know, okay, all right, you can cart it in from the supermarket and offer it all to Krishna, then Krishna becomes something like a prasadam machine. You know what I mean? So you got the microwave, you know, and you've got, oh, got the altar, you know, right next to each other. Microwave is to heat things up, and the altar is to transform things into prasadam. It's a prasadam machine, you know. Got the mixer, got the juicer, got the microwave, and got the prasadam machine. Yeah? It's all part of the kitchen gear, yeah? You need it, then. Yeah? It's important. You see how yeah, you could easily use Krishna like that. Yeah? Yeah? But there's something else, you know, making like a really nice offering. Can do it at home. You know? Can say every on some special day you cook for the deities in your house, make a special offering, and then after you invite guests. Yeah? And that's what, how it works. And if we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can read about Hiranya and Govinda and Arjuna. They were the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. And when Raghunath was small, at that time, Haridas Thakur would sometimes come and visit the house. So you can imagine it was quite a scene. But the thing was, they were Hiranya and Govinda and Majunda, they were householders. They were not part of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness because that had not been started yet. So they had no support like that. All that they had was, they were Vaishnavas and they were at home. And it's at every Ekadasi they used to cook, they used to make a special offering to the deities. And it's a big offering, every Ekadasi. And they're famous, these Ekadasi offerings. I mean, people would come for that prasad, they would distribute that prasad, and it's like a big offering, every Ekadasi they would make. Alright, so we see that this kind of culture exists in our scriptures. We can do it. We can do it. You're a lot of those deities there, a little money tied in. You can do it. And such kind of offering that like everyone will want to come in to have that Mahaprasada, that kind of offering. So I'm invited for the Maha at such and such. I'll come with you. Yes. I'll also come. You see, these kind of inner vows, one has to embrace something like that. And something we can do if you want some more nourishment. If you don't just want to be a good devotee and still not fulfilled. And I'm following everything. Maharaj, can I talk to you?
Yes.
I have been following everything now for so many years. But I don't know what to do next. Yeah. So this comes next, that we bring some more sacrifice into our life, some more remembrance. One devotee, he is collecting pictures. He's really good at it. He's got this incredible slide collection of Krishna pictures. Such good pictures. I mean, I'm not that good, you know what I mean? This like he's just got a knack for it. Nobody really finds them all, you know what I mean? But he always like when he see, and then he has a room, which is his private room, and he has an altar there, and some shivas there, and then the whole room is decorated in various ways with pictures. And wherever you look, it's like hundreds of pictures of Krishna. Each one of them is like special. Hundreds of special pictures of Krishna in the room, hundreds of them. So it's like, you go in that room, it's like, wow, quiet room, then quiet room. And you can see this, he has this inner vow, this inner passion, and to just do that. And it's become a thing, you know, like something that's grown into a whole culture he's made out of it. He has an inner vow. An inner vow that sort of that gives him a lot of inspiration. A lot. So we gotta find something like that. We can't just, you know. We're gonna take some initiatives in spiritual life. That is at one point becoming a necessity. It's like for me, it's obviously more singing than in pictures. I'm not such a picture man. You know, I'm more into kirtan and sound and that kind of meditation than into reading books. But I'm always looking for some special books and this and that, and it's sort of something that's capturing my mind. Yeah, something. Quite a collection on this computer. I have quite a collection. I have a library in Radadesh, in Belgium. Keep a library there. So like that. That is there. And then there are other things to do. So much to do. Okay. Have you been to Vrindavan? Oh, no, not yet. I've been. But I'm going again. Good. Because it's a matter of getting to know Vrindavan. I forgot to just watch the time. So I'm rattling around, waffling away. I'm going to 12:30. Okay, that's great. Well, so I'm waffling away, and we're going to Vrindavan, and we develop a relationship with Vrindavan. The first time you come to Vrindavan, well, it's like a first meeting, sometimes nice, sometimes not so nice, but gradually you come back and you get to know more what is there. And you can see there are many devotees, there are many temples, there are so many places connected to Krishna, so many stories, and you can see that one who is really getting absorbed in it gets a powerful way to become absorbed. Like Dinabandhu in Vrindavan became very absorbed. It's now almost 30 years that he's just exploring the parikrama of Vrindavan and make that his service. Lokanath Maharaj every year goes on this Vraj Mandala parikrama for many years, and nowadays Maharaj has been giving Bhagavad Katas. He was just doing one in South Africa as I was leaving. It just started. And when I hear Maharaj speak, then I hear a lot of Vrajmano Parikrama. I hear, he's telling us Bhagavatam, and he needs to tell stories about Vrindavan, and he talks, and then, there's this place, there's that place. Because he's been to all these places, he knows all these stories, he became absorbed in it. Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj makes the movies, and that's and he's really good at it, because although Maharaj is from New Zealand, he sounds like an intimate associate of Her Majesty the Queen. Therefore, today, we would like to present to you something.
something about Vrindavan.
So he has that kind of one hand, the formal touch. He has on one hand the formal touch, and on the other hand, then he takes us to all these intimate Vrindavan stories and places with a lot of taste, and yet in a respectful way. He has a nice mix of that, of like playfulness and respectfulness, and all that, and the beautiful pictures. And, you know, like he's got a whole film kit, you know, a serious camera and editing this and that, a couple of screens, and sits in his room. Editing the thing, right? And then Govardhan, he gets so absorbed in Govardhan that every year he used to come to our temple in Durban and do Govardhan Puja there. And then they built this whole hill of Govardhan, which is like a replica of Govardhan Hill. It has the same shape, and then around it all the different places are there. So there's different kums, and they're all like in the right place, and this. And then Maharaj takes all the temple devotees on a parikram, and this is Narada Kund. Well, then you get the whole story how Narada Muni wanted to also take part in the Rasa-lila, and finally Narada Muni got the opportunity and was taken into that kund and a dip and came out as a gopi and so on. And like that whole experience is there. And take there, and then we walk a little further, and we get to Kushinsarva. Okay, we're at Kushinsarva, still a long way to go. 23 kilometers around Govardhan. So, you know, Govardhan Puja takes a little longer. Yeah? But, you know, this creates the taste. This makes it all the transcendental experience. It's not like, okay, it's Govardhan Puja. Where's the harbour? Oh, the rice, you know, okay, we're making half the hill. Yeah. Okay, who makes the hill? Splash, 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 hill ready. Okay, put a few trees, few pecorals, okay. Okay, so we can then to the hill, it is nice, that's also nice. But the more we invest in it, the more nicer it becomes, the more meaningful it gets. So this is, and we can see, and then Bhakti Chaitanya got so absorbed in this Govardhan that he would take the voice in Govardhan Parikram in Vrindavan and take the whole day, you know, like a fast, someone walks fast, does Govardhan Parikram in 3 hours. Someone who's a bit more normal and has soft feet like me.
Thorns, stone,
5 hours. And then, but Maharaj takes 12 hours. 12 hours just to, because he stops at every place. Every place and gets into the story and the meditation. You have to have some patience, you know, the impatient mind goes, 12 hours, too long. I know, my mind, I've also had a mind like that. But I just, you know, if you go through it and just tell your mind, shut up, let it be in it, you actually come out with some real inspiration, some real taste, you know, it's like, wow. We really did go around this time, that you won't forget. So this kind of, and it becomes like a vow, like then at one, because the meditation on Govardhan was growing, then in the Durban Ratiyatra, Maharaj had to have a Govardhan tent, you know. And it's like the whole tent, it's all about Govardhan, it's just Govardhan Hill, big Govardhan stories, Govardhan Leelas, and Govardhan, 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 Govardhan. So it's Ratiyatra. And then it's like this huge Ratiyatra in Durban, enormous, and right in the middle there, Govardhan. And then finally he got a Govardhan Shila, and he got a box
with a glass window, right? And then he wears that around the neck, you know.
So everyone gets darshan and giri.
It's hanging there in a box with a glass window so you can get your darshan.
So I mean, it's like, it's an inner govardhan that became an inner vow, it became an absorption and holding down and focusing in govardhan. This is required. This is what has to happen in the devotee's life, you know. You can see, like, you know. Yeah, Bibi Govinda Maharaj, you know, I know him when he was still a Yogipati, right, in his Brahmachari days, or Vanaprastha days, rather. And he was always an incredible kirtan leader, you know, powerful voice. But of course, when in his younger years, there was no sit-down kirtan, you know. It was all stand-up, and he used to play the wombers on the ground, and he would take people by their clothes and swing them around, and throw them, and, like, you know, like, those kind of kirtans, serious kirtans. I remember that they used to throw gulab jamuns into the kirtan, and he would catch them. He was very good at it, extremely good at it. He would never miss, never fail. He would catch any time. So, what to say? Kirtan was always there. Yesterday I sang Viva Marisesa for you because I used to sing it every day in the morning in Vrindavan as a meditation. We take turns, of course, in leading it, but it became that song. It's not just a song I know, you know, a song I know. No, it's like became a meditation, and it became it's like something that a special connection with Krishna. So inner vows are aimed at that, and they are creating more depth spiritually. They take us beyond the mechanical platform. Because if we just stay within the confines of the vows of initiation, four regulative principles, 16 rounds, then we are a bit, there is a chance we get on the mechanical platform. So we have to take it further and make our spiritual life be like that. So that is quite important. The fundamental inner vow is smartavyama satatam vishnu smartavyama dhatusit sarvahini sedashu etiyo kinkaram. To always remember Krishna and never forget him. That is the purpose of all Vedic injunctions and prohibitions. So yeah, we must make more arrangements to, we have to remember Krishna. And making an offering to Krishna is that you remember Krishna. Oh, yeah. I'm not just thinking of my own enjoyment, my time. And no, I'm thinking, oh, you know, I'm thinking, well, you know, it's weekend, let's make some lasagna. Good idea. Let's call over some friends. Yay. Well, let's have some ice cream. Yay. What about the ginger beer? Sunday. It's gonna be good. No, that's when we think that's for us, you know. That's a joy party for us. It's a good time, you know. Some hour and a half, right? It's a no. It's this time we're doing it different. Let's make an offering for Krishna, an incredible offering for Krishna this Sunday, and then we'll take one. So you can be part of the offering. Not a problem.
But as you see the idea, it becomes a whole transcendental thing. If we put Krishna in the center.
So this inner vow to always remember Krishna and never forget him includes that we think of Krishna's senses, not our senses, and make arrangements for Krishna's senses, like I just described it.
What else? Naturalness I did already, yeah? Did I finish that? I can do this. I think I did that also. Authenticity, yeah, that's good enough.
Yeah, this is a nice slide. The shoes of satisfaction. For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger, even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, one is always satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. I'm sorry, I forgot to put in the number of the verse. It's a Bhagavatam verse. And in the later cantos, but now I can't remember the number of the verse. But it's an important verse. You see the point, we have to have satisfaction in spiritual life. Then we can take so much austerity, we don't feel it. But no satisfaction, no deeper satisfaction, then we'll be very much.
Okay, that's enough. And we got a whole hour left for some discussion and other things.
So I think first of all it's time for it's your turn. So we can do a few questions and then we can also get a little interactive. So first see if there's a question or two or three. Three questions I'll take. Yes.
In this slide, we have said the inner wall, the Vaishnava takes a wall to take out some sinful, habits of water out of his life. The definition of sin, it's different for different people. Like, for example, somebody who's practicing a different religion, for example, you would say, eating potato is a sin. You may call it eating garlic is a sin. What's the definition of sin then?
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, everything religious or irreligious which is not devotional service is sinful. Everything religious or irreligious, if it is not devotional service, that is sinful. Krishna's caveat to respond. Everything religious or irreligious, if it is not devotional service, it's sinful. So that's quite a strong approach, but that is the devotee's approach. It's satisfaction will be there, sinlessness will be there when we serve, when we try to please Krishna. And that's it. What are we going to do? When we talk about inner vows, what are we going to do to please Krishna? Start meditating. What can I do to please Krishna? That is the big question. Inner vow. Something special that I can do to please Krishna. What is it? Can you know the Bhagavad Gita by heart? Or at least some slokas. Chanakya Pandit says, let not a day go by without learning a verse, or at least half a verse, or at least a line of a verse, or a word of a verse. I read it, but someone may read it and someone may just say, this is it, I'm going to do that. Thousands of people may read this statement of Chanakya Pandit, and one may say, that's it, I'm going to do it. And from that day on, that person takes the inner vow, I'm going to do it. and then does it for many, many years. What inner vows do we have? Two more questions.
So the Tao chanted 16 rounds, that, you know, does that, you say there's the inner and outer aspect of that also. You can walk up and down and people see you and observe that, oh, you're chanting 16 rounds, but inside, you know, not much is going on, or too much is going on.
Right.
So, it says that of all the instructions of the spiritual master, the Tao to chant 16 rounds a day is the most important. I just wondered if you could elaborate on that.
Chanting is with us in all stages of spiritual life. Chanting is in the beginning practiced with struggle as a process for becoming purified. And for Srila Rupa Goswami, chanting is nectar and it wants millions of tongues and millions of ears to chant and to hear the name. The chanter wants millions of tongues and millions of ears while the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart. Well, you know, that's quite exalted. So, we hope to be somewhere in between. We hope to be, maybe we're not there where Rupa Goswami is, but we also hope to be a bit beyond the beginner struggles. And to just actually appreciate chanting. To just chant, try and chant nicely. Is it necessary to have a bath before starting chanting? Or get up early morning, just wash face, brush, and start chanting? Well, what do you think? Who's in favor of the bath? It's a must. You must take a bath first, or else. Now, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes get up in the morning, just wash the mouth, start chanting, and then take a bath after. So that is not so strict in the chanting, because after all, it says you can always chant. And any place, any time, any circumstances, the chanting is not dependent on such external things. One can even chant when one is in an unclean state, if possible. But out of respect for the name, one would wash hands, mouth, and feet. And then start chanting, and then later take a bath. Because he would chant very early in the night. And so take a bath a little, and only after sleeping very short. So, depending. But it is not a bad habit to rise early in the morning and take a bath first. It's a good thing. And then start chanting. But it's possible. Because chanting is not ritualistic like deity worship. Deity worship is very, very strict about everything, about the bath and all that. But chanting is of a different nature. It's not bound by any external condition, doesn't depend on it. But out of respect for the name, some cleanliness, so at least washing in the mouth is there. But in Hari Bhakti Vilas, it is mentioned that when we rise in the morning, that the first thing we do is take bath. It says, you offer, as you wake up, you offer obeisances to your worshipable deity, to Guru and the worshipable deity. Then you take bath, then you put tilak, then you will chant the holy name. So that's a good procedure. That's a good procedure that we would normally follow. But if practical circumstances dictate something else, all right, then this option is there. Option. Second motion.
say it, it's even better. A disciple is like in a mood of chastity. A disciple is always thinking of how to please the spiritual master. A disciple is meditating on the spiritual master. What is his mood? What is his liking? So even just like the wife who is thinking, trying to create an atmosphere pleasing to the husband. A husband she loves, you know, like look at that picture, right? So she wants to make an atmosphere where he is the way he likes it, and she knows him, so she knows how to do that. A disciple in the same way knows the spiritual master, knows the likes and dislikes of the spiritual master, and knows in this situation my spiritual master would like to we'll do that. That's an example of chastity, of that chaste mood. So the disciple in the same way is not just sort of, okay, I have a spiritual master and I'm following his instruction by the letter. It's my duty as a disciple, I have to follow his instruction, so I'm doing that. And for the rest, I am what I am, and I never think of my spiritual master, but I understand the instructions. No, a disciple should think like, what is the mood of my spiritual master? And look at Srila Prabhupada and look like how much he is a follower of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Our Bhakti Vikash Maharaj made quite a contribution when he wrote a biography of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in 3 volumes. It's a serious thing. But even if one reads only part of it, it's very interesting. So there was a part in the biography. The first part sort of deals with the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and some of the earlier events and how he grew up and how he became a devotee and what he did and so on. And then the second part, the second volume, is dealing with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta as a preacher. And then when you read that, then you can really see how Prabhupada just took everything from the spiritual master. How much he took it from the spiritual master and just faithfully, whatever the spiritual master was, what was important to the spiritual master became important to Prabhupada. He was very faithful like that as a disciple. Very chaste disciple. Whatever was important to his guru became important to Prabhupada. And it's like, and that's challenging because our guru is different from us. He has a different nature. And it's like, in the beginning, we may not think so much of these things, but after a while, we're following him, and then we begin to notice that, like, well, yeah, but I'm not him. I have a different mood, I have a different nature, and how do I deal with that? I mean, I also have to be like myself. Still, whatever is important for our spiritual master is important to us. That's chastity as a disciple. And we should take the Lord out. Okay, let's see what's the news. How can one become really, really serious about spiritual life
after hearing from various acharyas, how does one cultivate the urge towards spirituality or something? Well, that urge comes in different ways. First it comes through intelligence. You just understand it's the better thing to do. Even although sometimes part of me, feels it's a little difficult sometimes, but I know it's a better thing to do. So it comes from intelligence. And then the second thing is, while we are doing it on the strength of intelligence, knowing it's the better thing to do, then taste will also come. Just like we like to chant the Sri Bhagavisha, so it is taste, it's nice, it's fun. And someone says, well, you should chant the names of Krishna. By the intelligence, we know that it's beneficial to chant the names of Krishna. And this song is full of names of Krishna. But we like to do it. Hey, Shyam, you're back. Material disturbances can agitate the mind and dampen the spirit. How to rejuvenate the shattered heart to get that enthusiasm back? Act enthusiastic externally. And just by acting enthusiastic, then we become caught up in it. If we are in the kirtan and we stand like a tree, the trees in the kirtan. They are not going to get the ecstasy. So, move the legs and moving a bit. The trees and the bears in the kirtan. So, a little more life, take a deep breath. Like that. I had a situation where there was a devotee, and he was nice. He was... He was very determined, but at the same time struggling with the regulative principles. This devotee, it was in Amsterdam where he was staying, he was old. So he went to the government and he asked for facility for food for life, and they gave him a house. And they gave him vehicles to use, so he did well. Then he went to the director of the big chain store, something like Myers, and they're all over the country, these big stores. And he said that in your store, you have a book department, but you don't have Prabhupada's books. You should have a full range of Prabhupada's books. In your store. The director said, I like you. You've got guts. Nobody ever walked into my office like that and told me just like straight in my face, what I should do. So, you know what? I'll do it. So, for a while, I had all of Prabhupada's books in those, all over the country in those stores. And he did it. And so he did really remarkable things. But he had the other side. And the other side was that he was having problems with the regulative principles. And Amsterdam is a dangerous place when it comes to that. And he got AIDS. Can happen in a place like that. Sydney as well. Anyway, it happens. So there he was. So I was in India, but I knew him, you know, and I heard from the Dutch devotees, this and this devotee, he's not doing well, he's very ill, he has AIDS, so, okay. I happened to be coming through Holland, and in transit, and then someone said, Andre is going really bad, he is like in his final days, would you like to meet him? I said, all right, I'll go there. So I went there, I went to the hospital, and I sat down next to the bed, and he coughed, and a ball of mucus came out of his mouth as big as a tennis ball. Oh, huge ball came out. Oh, it's bad, right? And then he says, thank you so much for visiting, you know, I'm busy planning my funeral. I said, well, you know, anyway, just think of Krishna. He said, no, it's okay, I'm busy planning my funeral. And, you know, I like your singing. Could you sing at my funeral? So, yeah, I must admit, it flashed through my mind, but, like, you know, I'm here only in transit, and I'm leaving, and, you know, gosh, you know, I have to come back for his funeral, is that? So, what could I say? The mind goes like that. So, but what could I say? I had to say yes. And so I said, yes, of course. Anyway, he died within days. And so then it was the day of the funeral. I was still in the country, so, okay, convenient. Then I came for the funeral. And first, there was a person who was reading the letter. There were lots of people, because Andre, he was in touch with many, many people. Right? He was that kind of person. So it was packed. There were like 300-400 people. It was this huge. And there was an amphitheater. It was a room and chairs going down from the top. Then there was a stage, and on the stage there was the box. Well, okay. Someone read a letter from Andre. Andre actually, in his last moment, had been initiated by Bibi Govinda Swami as Madan Gopal. So for the rest of the story, he's Madan Gopal. And so Madan Gopal was saying, all of you are my friends, and all of you are very different, from each other. But today is my funeral, and you're all my friends, so my request is that today you all appreciate each other. He said, well, you might be thinking that now I'm dead and gone, but I have news for you. I'm still alive. Yes. I'm still alive, but now I'm moving on to another body. Just in moments from now, a Hare Krishna devotee will come forward and he will start singing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And I want that for my sake, all of you sing along, and not just a little bit, right? From the heart, with enthusiasm, he say. And after the whole ceremony is over, then if you have time, you can go to the temple, and there they will serve a vegetarian feast. So you really organized the whole thing. Okay, it was my turn, it was time to sing, and I started, and you know, just a simple melody, and just, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the people had to chant it. What could they do? You know, I mean, he had asked them specially, and not a little. So there was this lady, she was kind of, you know, the sort of lady, and she would go, like that, everybody really got into it, and you know,
Kirtan picked up the momentum and the room started rocking, you know? I mean, 20, 25 minutes, then they gave me a sign to stop. So I stopped and they turned on the Govinda tape. And the tape went, Govinda, Adi Purusham, Tamam Bhajami. And then the box started to sink down in the stage by some electric lift. Disappeared, and it's Govinda song. People cracked. They were not devotees, but they became overwhelmed. They fell in each other's arms. They were like, never went to a funeral like that. So that's how we have to sing. Not like trees and bears, but like the people on Madhavapra's funeral. If we sing like that from the heart, then some enthusiasm automatically reawakens, even when we don't feel enthusiastic. We get caught up in the whole thing. So the chanting is, so how can we chant enthusiastically? The chanting itself will make us enthusiastic. So just act enthusiastic, get into it, and then it will make us enthusiastic. Whether you feel enthusiastic or not, has nothing to do with it. How to be able to chant attentively after disturbing situations in life? It's difficult, we have to learn to switch off. Switch off the mind. Don't do anything while chanting. Just switch it off. Later. Not now. Right? Not in. No. Out. So this takes some practice. But with time we learn, switch off the mind. Just like the light switch. Off. Now it's chanting. No, nothing else. Just chanting. Nothing else. Just chanting.
Switch off.
Okay.
Practice makes perfect. I have heard many times that the wife gets 50% of the credit of the husband. I've also heard that this works in Kamkanda. Can you please explain? Well, it works. It just works. Like that. There are advantages to being a wife. A chaste wife. It is true that the wife gets 50% of the benefit of the service of the husband. So,
check, check! Stop!
And he's sitting there. This is not the last year. Of course, you know, we can go beyond this man and woman role, right, and just go to the transcendental platform, and just ladies can also become an ocean of mercy when they are completely absorbed in our name, and you know, even if your husband is like a wet sock, they can bless him, right? Yeah, because sometimes it's, especially these days, it's often the ladies that are more serious about spiritual life than the men. And it's the ladies that get up in the morning and the men who roll over a little more. And it's oftentimes the men that are, you know, not so serious. And overall, in the score, the ladies do better than the men. Shame, shame, shame. Sham, sham, sham. And what can I say? So we should all get more serious and make an endeavor. And when they become transcendental devotees, right, then whoever is full of Krishna consciousness can bless the other.
Maharaj, I've just got a quick question. Okay. Oftentimes I get asked endless question of how one becomes advanced. I just want your explanation on that.
How one becomes what?
Advanced in spiritual life.
Advanced in spiritual life? I have no idea. I just said a neophyte. But at least let's be active. Let's be active. It's about being active in devotional service. That is the trick. It's about taking responsibility. Let us take our service, and whatever we do, let us do it wholeheartedly. Let us put an energy into it, and that is not just anything else. It's so funny, we go so far that we join a movement like the Hare Krishna movement, which in itself has very high standards of commitment. And four related principles high, the dress so different from mainstream society, everything, right? So such a commitment. Right? And then, after we've done all that, then we become slack. Then we just chant half-hearted. Then we just don't really get serious about reading. We don't really do anything. But we make already such a big step. And then we're there. So that last little bit, with enthusiasm, with life, with active, yes, not just in everything, not just half-hearted, but with commitment. This is advanced. With commitment. We have to make commitment. Do whatever we do. Yes. I'm going to do it. Do it nicely, seriously. Prahlad Maharaj's statement that for one who has decided to scribble in their existence in the material world, there will not be Krishna conscious by personal endeavor, etc. Why would one make any endeavor if one has decided to remain here? What can I say? Materialists. And Prahlad was speaking about the materialists, and his desire was to deliver those materialists somehow or other. Then there are devotees. We are not materialists, but we are weak because we are still mixed with material desire, and therefore we are weak. Then one must forcefully put the material desires aside. Put them aside. Take a box. Put your material desires in there. Write on there. My material desires. And put the box on the shelf. Keep it on the shelf. And get involved in service. Then one day you'll be free. And think, today I'm going to play with my material desires. You take the box off the shelf, look inside. Hey! Who took my material desires? Half of them. Who took, you guess? You don't know that Krishna is a chore. It is said that Krishna says, Sarvadana Paityamale Kansanam Tom Sarapati Moksha Yamanasuja. You surrender unto me, I take away all these material reactions. I take them. So this is the process. Krishna will take it by me. So even if we have some material desires, we just ignore them and engage in service, knowing that Krishna will take away these material desires. And that's, some people, they are showing this enthusiasm to take up the service. Others, even if they know they should, they still can't do it. They say, oh, I don't know. I can't do it. I can't lift this hand. I can't put it inside this beam there. And my fingers, I can't remove them. And my lips. In Prabhupada's favorite cartoon, the man who says chant, or the baby says chant, chant, the man says can't, can't. Okay. So if, then what can we do? What can we do? Ultimately, this process is voluntary. And it's a voluntary process. You cannot force. Of course, you can bring a gun and say, chant. But how long can you stand there with a gun? After a while,
still, just start doing it.
I know actually one person who became a sannyasi, but he said before, when he was in the world, there was this very big friend, he had very huge man. And he got into chanting, the big man. And then he came to him, our sannyasi, and he told him, you chant! And then he just started chanting, and then he didn't stop. He couldn't stop. He was just chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting, chanting. And then he became a devotee. The big man never became a devotee. But he became. Some will become devotees, some will not. The choice is ours. What can I say? At the end of the day, it's in our hands. That's why, after all the good advice, go home and say goodbye. And then, you know, everyone's heard the same thing. Everyone's heard the Bhagavad Gita. Some take it, some don't. Krishna is watching. Krishna is watching. This one will take a little longer. But that's it. That's our independence. So yeah, you gotta do something. What is the difference between offending, criticizing devotees? And trying to understand the bad quality in order to be objective about it and to learn from it. The best thing is to not be objective towards devotees. The best thing is to be subjective and to and submissive and to just see devotees in a good light. And always look for their good qualities. The best thing is not to criticize at all, even not to learn from. The best thing we can learn is to not criticize at all. If, however, we are in the unfortunate position that we are in charge of other devotees' well-being or service, then sometimes they can point out fault. And that's dangerous, because it may create in us again, it may reawaken our fault-finding mentality. So, you know, there was a book called The 1 Minute Manager, and it was a good book, one of these little management books, and in that book, I'll tell you why it was good, because in that book there was a part where the manager, instead of catching people doing something wrong, which is mostly what managers do, look around. How many times do I have to tell you? I told you 100 times over. Do you have anything up there? Is there anything there? I mean, you know, I'll explain it to you again. Are you getting me now?
Those calls. So that's maybe the faulty manager.
What this manager was doing, he was going around looking all day at people working under him, and finally caught you.
You did that right, you son of a gun.
Glorified for doing something right. It wasn't easy to catch him. Finally caught him doing something right and gave him all the glories. So this is what a Vaishnava should do. We should not catch people doing something wrong. We should catch him doing something right. And even if it's difficult, sooner or later, we're going to catch them. He did something right. And then they'll say, I can't believe it. No. Just glorify. Oh, you did that so nice. You did it. That was really amazing what you did. And as soon as we do that, everyone starts to feel better, everyone starts to do better, everyone starts to perform better, relationships improve. That is Vaishnava. This management book borrowed it from actually Vaishnava relationships. This is what we should do. We should catch people doing something right.
Right. What are we doing next? 12:30.
Lunch break already. We just had breakfast.
That's Kolath, we did that.
You've got a loud voice. Read this out loud.
You said we should find something in Krishna consciousness that satisfies us and makes us happy, e.g. Varanj Parakram, video editing, kirtan, etc. I've heard that Srila Prabhupada said book distribution is the most important or most pleasing to him. Does that mean people who aren't already directly distributing books are not pleasing Prabhupada, or not as much as those who do? I've also heard that those who distribute books receive special mercy. So do people who don't distribute books not receive that special mercy? Are we being selfish by only doing the service we enjoy or have a talent for?
We should not take Srila Prabhupada as a rigid personality. Srila Prabhupada was really the acharya for the whole world. Srila Prabhupada was one who, just like Krishna, was appreciating the good qualities in everyone. And if he would see that someone would do some service, Prabhupada would say, oh, this is very nice. Very nice. He wasn't. When Prabhupada was asked, which service is the best? He wouldn't say book distribution. Then Prabhupada would say pure devotional service is the best. So any service Prabhupada was appreciating. Some were the pujaris, some were the cooks, some were book distributors, and so on. That Srila Prabhupada was giving much importance to book distribution, because it was reaching out to others, is a fact. And each of us can think about that. And actually, we could do some book distribution. The only thing is that it's done in different ways. Some ways may be hard for us, at one point, the devotees developed a technique to distribute books. G'day, are you from here or out of town? Out of town. Oh, We got 100 books today that we can hand out to all the people that are down.
No more than a lucky few. And you know, like, they're thinking, wow, I'm getting this book. And then he's saying, yes, you know, we're asking, of course, the contribution for the printing cost, right? And you know, most people give $50. See what you can do. Give a green one. And like that, book distribution was going on. That requires a certain technique, and you know, not everyone can do all that. Some are too shy for it, some just don't know how to do it. But recently I also started another program in South Africa, and this program is I am distributing books to you. I am distributing books in plastic bags to you. At least 10 books per bag, and you buy the bag from me. Then you can. Then it's your duty to get those books to others. Either you sell them, or you give them away, or you forget them on the table in the doctor's waiting room. That's, you know, you give it as a birthday gift, wrap it up in paper, ribbon on it. Whatever you do, but you have to give them away, you have to bring them to other people. Whether you sell them or not, that's your issue. So we're doing that program in England also now, we started that program, so that everyone becomes involved in passing on some books to people they know. In this way we're networking, because everyone has his own unique people that you can reach that I cannot reach. I can reach you, but behind you there are many that you can reach, but I can't reach. You somehow or other get them a book, and you decide if you want a donation or not. If you get a donation, pass it on to Krishna. In this way, everyone can partake, and it becomes easier. So it's certainly good to do something with book distribution and to think about it. But we don't have to get into this fundamentalist type of mood where you think, you know, only book distribution and nothing but book distribution is the way. Only a book distributors are the real devotee, and everybody else is, you know, is just sort of spare wheel, you know, tolerated, you know, pariah, outcast, you know, like that. Then we are creating a caste consciousness, right? And we all know what caste consciousness is. And an elite class and everyone else is not appreciated by Krishna. The spiritual life is the property of the elite. No. Prabhupada appreciated all service to Krishna, whatever it was. Right? Cleaning, simple things. The right things. But yeah, these books are important. That's it. We would like people to have. And that's why earlier on I gave a plug about www.distributebooks.com. www.distributebooks.com. Have a look next time you log on. I've done your questions, and the lunch break is approaching. If you're hungry already, you have powerful digestion, or maybe you're always hungry. I found some questions. We do those also then. As soon as one is married, at the early stages, how to control the senses? It depends how Krishna conscious you are before you get married. If you're already mature in Krishna consciousness, then even in the early days of marriage, there is no need to fall down. But when you're not so Krishna conscious,
and still holding on to many material ways, yeah, and probably in the early stages of marriage you will fall down. Therefore, it is good to prepare, not just get married in the mode of passion, but to get to prepare a bit. Therefore, it's good to spend some time just building up spiritual life before jumping into marriage. Because it really, that's how it should be. One should already have some strength, some discipline, and then that's better. But if that's not the case, well, you know, then if things get out of hand, all right, then when things go wrong in following the spiritual standards, don't stay there. Don't stay there. Get up. Start again. Start again. Just go back to the proper standard. Start again. And that's what it is. You say, okay, they went wrong anyway. Start again. Otherwise, remember, as I explained, see the bigger picture. See, don't just see the small attraction to the opposite sex that is there. Don't just see the pleasures of a physical relationship, but see also the long-term consequences. How it binds us into a body. And remember the times that you were in the dentist chair, just like me. And the times that you still will be in the dentist chair in the future, just like me. Oh, that time will come. And at first, it's just a hole. And then you come back, and then it's like, uh-oh, it's going to be a crown. And then, the next stage is like, you go to the bed too, and you go, oh, okay, I guess I need a crown. And the dentist says, well, I don't know if I can save that. And then the next thing is extraction. And then the next thing is, well, a bridge or an implant, or just to give up. And gradually the nose and chin grow together. So remember all that. The material body is not just full of pleasure. So don't be blinded by just the pleasure. Remember the suffering in the material world. I'm suffering. The moment suffering that was in your life. I can tell you a few stories about mine and about the lives of many people. So I'm not suffering. I should go back to God. So even in the early stages of marriage, let's go back to God. And last but not least, if we take a vow and due to our material circumstances we are not able to follow it, it also keeps us from following basic and minimum standards. What should we do? Thank you. We have a few options. One is sink down into the material swamp and be swallowed up, and just go deep into the mud and just of material life and disappear. Where is he gone? I don't know, I haven't seen him for ages. He doesn't come to the Sunday feast anymore. Swallowed by the mud. That's one option. Another option is become an alcoholic. Another option is become a ruthless businessman that cheats and anybody and everyone and collect lots of money. Come to my ship. That's another option. So there are many options that we have. There are 8,400,000 species of life. There are many ways of life, you know. There are lots of apartments in Sydney. Go for your life, as they say. And life after that, and life after that, and life after that, and many lives in the material world. Krishna says, go ahead. Krishna doesn't force anyone to take a spiritual life. We get the chance. So, if we take a vow, and due to our material circumstances, we're not able to follow it, it also keeps us from following basic and minimum standards. What should we do? Thank you. Start following the standards. Start following again. If you didn't follow for a while, start again. Simply that. It's up to us. It's up to us, you know. We can help. I visited devotees who had given up Krishna conscious practices, who had bottles of wine in the house and were smoking and like that. And, you know, out of respect for me, they didn't smoke in front of me. They went on the balcony outside to have a smoke. What can I say? I've tried to encourage them. But how much energy can we spend with that? Ultimately, they have to do it. They have to say, okay, I quit this, I'm back to spiritual. So we help people, but at the end of the day, everyone has to help himself. And that's the bottom line. Take it or leave it. What can I do? And that's Krishna's attitude, to understand. We are free. Free to take advantage of this movement, or free to go away. We are free. What can we do? No one can force us. But if you're fallen and you can't follow, never leave the devotees. Stay with the devotees. Whatever. Never. Because whenever you stay with the devotees, there is a chance that you start again one day. But it won't be easy to stay with the devotees if you're not following him.